Welcome to the special edition of the Atlanta Business Radio. I am your host, Lee Cantor, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with one of Atlanta's top financial advisors, Debbie Montgomery. Welcome to the show, Debbie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So how's your New Year been?
We had a great New Year's.
Great New Year's? That's good. It sounds like you're smiling pretty good.
I got a story.
A good story? Maybe another time. So, Debbie, how did you get into giving people financial planning advice? How'd that happen?
Well, I started my career as a stockbroker.
What about as a kid? Were you like a saving all your money kid or a spending all your money kid?
I didn't have any money as a child. My family had no money. It was always fascinating that people could make money in the stock market or lose money in the stock market. I just never really understood it.
So you were aware of the stock market as a kid? What age do you think you became aware of it?
In high school, when I was a senior. Of course, when I was in college and taking the overview courses in business, that's when I really started to, mainly economics. Economics was where I thought was the most interesting in how the economy worked and how money was made and how money was lost and how businesses operated.
So you like that? That kind of was intriguing.
Yes.
So then, what's your degree in?
Finance.
Is it finance or finance?
It's finance.
Because I know. The professors call it finance.
That's exactly right. That's what they trained us to say. If I didn't learn anything, I learned to pronounce it finance.
that's the important thing. So you left college, you finished, graduated, and then you started your career in an interesting place, right?
Yes. It was always, very interesting. Dean Witter Reynolds.
And where was that location of that?
We were in Buckhead. I was at the Atlanta Plaza over there on East Paces Ferry Road.
Right. And then you were doing that for a while. And then you had the opportunity when Dean Witter got involved with Sears. Right?
Oh, right, right. Yeah. You know what? I was at the Sears store when I first started. They had the Allstate office and the Sears store and the Dean Witter office in the Sears mall. And it was really nice because I was just there, sitting there, and people came in. Just coming in to look for help.
And they were coming in looking for maybe a washing machine and financial advice.
Exactly. They came in for appliances and tools, and they stopped by and asked about the... It was really an interesting place because we had regulars that came through. Old men wanting ticker, quotes. And
oh, so the ticker was going, like in the office?
Well, I had a quote. In those days, we had Quotrons.
Right.
So we had the Quotron up and running. They'd grab the machine and start putting in their symbols. But it was the regulars. Oh, what's his face? He's coming back again. It was a lot of fun.
How many years was Dean Witter in Sears? Do you remember?
Oh, I'm thinking they were probably in there 6-7 years.
Wow.
So I was in there like three. Wow. 3 or 4 of those years. I was very blessed because I got all my – some of the accounts I have today I got from the Sears store.
Because of relationships at Sears.
At the Sears stores.
That's – that was it. If you think about that, how crazy that is to have a financial advisor inside of an appliance store.
Exactly.
How crazy is that?
People brought their life savings into the Sears store.
I know, with their
it down in front of somebody they did not know.
That is just too funny.
And at the time, I probably looked like I was 18.
Because that's a totally unique background. I mean, not many people started out the way you started out.
Well, it was better than sitting in a desk cold calling.
Right, cold calling. They were coming to you.
They were coming to me. Every month I'd get one really great retirement rollover every month, inevitably.
Did you have any mentors?
Yeah, actually, yes. Carol Banks. And he was with Dean Witter when it was called Dean Witter Security, or when it was Reynolds Securities. And he would be what I would think of as a quintessential stockbroker. And he said, Debbie, I was a stockbroker when people actually had respect for us.
So what'd you learn? What were some of the high points?
He was a bond. He was like a municipal bond guy. And he just had a very high degree of ethics. So he had like the biggest book in the branch. There was over 110 brokers up there. The biggest book under management. Uh-huh. But his income was about half of what the top producers did. And, and he just said, how do you think that is? Why do you think I can have the biggest book of account and I make half of what the woman there or that guy there makes?
Right. So why was that?
He didn't churn his accounts. He was very...
He was a buy and hold?
municipal bonds are naturally like that. So he had a huge number of tax-free bonds. So I learned a lot about, you know, which bonds to stay away from, which ones to buy, you know, when I was doing tax-free bonds.
Right. Now, how has that impacted your philosophy right now? Do you still, you're a bond person, or you're more, you like a lot of diversification, right?
Yeah, you do diversification, use outside money managers, and, a lot of financial advisors don't have the securities background, so they don't know as much about individual bonds. They could see somebody's portfolio and not even know what they're looking at. And, you know, when I get a statement, I know what I'm looking at.
So, what do you like in the market right now? Anything?
A specific stock?
Like, or just in general, with all the turmoil?
You know, I try not to worry about the turmoil so much.
Doesn't bother you, the subprime, all this nonsense, the government getting involved?
Yeah, honestly, you know, I've been in this business 20 years, and it's always something.
Uh-huh.
It's always something.
Right.
I mean, you can go back year after year after year, and you'll be like, okay, I remember the invasion of the first invasion of Iraq.
Right.
For 3 months straight with that line in the sand. Oh, it was horrible. Every day the stock market went down, every day for 3 months, waiting for somebody to do something. And, you know, you can just go back year after year, and there's always something. And this is just another thing, and it'll pass. It always does.
The market always kind of absorbs whatever the turmoil is.
Right, because these are external things that affect the market in the short run.
Uh-huh.
But internally, I mean, what the market is about the underlying values of the companies that these securities represent.
And then eventually that always, you know, it levels off.
Things go back to equilibrium. Things get out of, you know, the exuberance, and then they go back to equilibrium again.
Uh-huh. And so for you personally, who do you like as a perfect client?
A perfect client.
Do you have a specialty? Do you like baby boomers? Do you like retirees? Do you like maybe somebody who's young and just getting their career going and you want to kind of help guide them?
You know, I've got several of all of the above. I mean, some of my favorite clients I've had for a very long time, but they're more like family to me. And, you know, they're actually the kind of people, the one in mind in particular, that if I came across something I wasn't sure about, I'd actually ask his opinion. That's how sophisticated he is. And then, you know, when you're dealing with younger people, what's interesting is younger people seem to be very risk averse, which is kind of weird.
Really?
Yeah.
I would think the opposite.
Well, they're short-term focused. They're not long-term focused. Young people think today and, like, what's next week and what happened just last month. And, yeah, it isn't the opposite. So with those folks, you know, it's just a matter of helping them stay long-term focused because they've got time on their side.
Right, exactly. They can make a ton of mistakes.
They can make a ton of mistakes. And it's just an encouragement, you know, just to be an encouragement to them to say, don't worry about the short-term stuff and just
hang in there.
Yeah, just hang in there. With the older folks, a lot of them have already seen all that, and they don't want to make any more mistakes.
Right.
The ones I don't want to work with, the people that I would prefer not to, you know, and it concerns me too greatly. You have older people who have taken too much risk, and what they tend to do is they're in that catch up mode, and so they're just so focused on they've got to get. I mean, they'll say I have to have a 14% return to do what I need to do to be able to get. And they're like 65 years old, and they're like, I got to get 14% for the next 5 years in order to be able to retire, and that's really scary. Because it's like, yeah, well, I hope that works out for you.
Good luck with that.
The odds are not within your favor.
Right. Now, what are some of the mistakes that baby boomers are making right now? You know, when they're not at 65, but say they're at like, you know, 50.
Well, most people, when I see account statements, which I find really interesting, and you successful people, hardworking people, diligent savers, and they're doing what they think is the right thing to do by spreading their money around into different investments. But what's interesting is when you take a little closer x-ray of all these funds or portfolios that they have, it's all in the same thing.
Right.
And
I know index funds were popular a few years ago.
Right. And I have a gentleman, he's got three different accounts, and he's got three different S&P 500 index funds.
And he thought
they're different names. I mean, there's a Vanguard, and then they got something, and then they got the Merrill Lynch index. And they're all the same. He's got the same in all the accounts.
But he thought he was diversified because
diversified.
He had three different ones. But in essence,
they're
he had
all
the same thing.
Large cap stocks. So
what should
they
do? But what's the solution for them?
Well, you know, there are so many segments to the market and to investing, you know, and, you know, you see the ups and downs of all of them. We've seen the ups of real estate, and now we're seeing, you know, the downtrend and in some of that. Of course, real estate is what saved many people in 01, 02, you know, when the market, you know, really went down. It's those real estate investments and small cap international stocks that saved people's portfolios if people had them. And unfortunately, no one stays diversified in areas they perceive to be bad. So large cap growth stocks, you know, did very, very well just prior to the big drop with the tech stocks. But what people didn't see is that they do come back, and you always have to maintain a certain percentage in an area that you would perceive to be you wouldn't want.
Right. But you have to be ready for when it does come back.
Right. Because every year, you just never know. Real estate's doing horribly now, but 2 or 3 years from now, that may be the, you know, place to have some of your money.
Right.
It's just a matter of the percentages in those classes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a portfolio manager comes in, because they sort of look forward in terms of the investment horizon and determine what's overvalued, what's undervalued, and they can put those portfolios together so that you don't have too much exposure in an area that's overvalued.
Right. And how often should you be readjusting?
Well, it just depends on your strategy. Some managers automatically readjust when a certain sector has gone too much of a percentage out of its allocation.
Uh-huh.
Say it was supposed to have 15% and it's up to 17, well, they'll reallocate that 2% somewhere else where it
would
needs
it
to
be like on a monthly basis or quarterly?
Usually they don't have to be done that often. Like I said, some portfolio managers do it annually automatically, and then others, when there's a certain skew, I mean, if it's gotten out of a certain percentage, then it automatically does it whenever. I mean, it may have taken 4 months for that particular sector to have gotten too big. Then they'll reallocate. So it depends.
What do you do for your clients?
Well, most
typically,
what I do is I have money managers handling the portfolios for me, and it's fee based.
Uh-huh.
So my job is to make sure that the portfolios, the investments that they have, reflect their risk tolerance
and their objectives.
And it goes hand in hand. And so also, I mean, the hardest job for a financial advisor is when times are really, really good and, say, the S&P index funds are all doing 19% or something outrageous. You know, frankly, a well-diversified portfolio isn't necessarily going to do that during those times.
Right.
And we have to keep people grounded that, no, you cannot go chasing those returns because you can get hurt.
Right.
This party will come to an end.
And that's...
And for whatever reason, they feel like they're missing the boat on something, and they're not. So, you know, that's our job as a financial advisor, to help people keep perspective. And it can keep the, you know, if it's a 5, 10 year, I mean, whatever their time frame is, keep that in focus.
Right.
Because if you're retirement planning and you're going out 10, 15 years, it's amazing what people do after 1 year when they're disappointed.
Right. They panic, right?
They either panic or they're disappointed. Like, they think that they missed out on, I could have done this or that. Everybody looks in the rearview mirror.
Right.
And it's always easy to say,
hindsight tells you, oh, we should have been in that fund. Right?
We could have been millionaires, yeah. We could have been millionaires.
If we did that,
we could have been a millionaire.
Now, when a person is putting together their portfolio, is there a certain amount of money they have to have in order to work with you?
No, really. A lot of advisors have their minimum. Some of them are $200,000. Some of them are $1 million that they have. And it's because they have so many clients. You can only take on so many clients.
Right.
And service them effectively. So I've been in the business a long time, but I've been a mom, and I've been a stay-home mom for many, many years,
right,
just dealing with a very small group of people I've had for 18, 19 years.
Right.
But now that my children are, you know, not as, what is it?
Needy.
Needy, yeah. You know, they're not as needy now. So I'm at a point now where I can now accept clients. And,
right,
and you know, it's just the goal for me is just to be able to help as many people that need my help.
Right.
Because not everybody needs my help.
Right. Now, how has, like, the technology changed your business now? There's so many, you know, the brokerage that you can do online, and mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a lot more people that are managing their own money.
Mm-hmm.
How has that impacted your business?
It has an impact. I do my own, you know, E-Trade. I mean, I do my own.
Do you find the consumers more kind of intelligent or more knowledgeable?
Well, if they're not, it's because they're not interested. I mean, because the information's online if you have an inclination to do it. There's just a lot of people that just don't have the interest. They just don't have the interest. They're right. intelligent enough to do it, but their time just isn't there. That's just not what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. And when they're finished working all day long, the last thing they want to do is go home and research mutual funds.
Right. So you think that's best for most people, mutual funds rather than individual stocks?
Well, it depends on how much money you have and how much time you're willing to dedicate to your. If you're doing individual stocks, you really need to spend a lot of time following them and tracking them, and you have to have some sort of discipline in place so that you have an out. You know, what's the plan on if you lose money? Everybody thinks you're going to make money in individual right. stocks, but okay, so what happens if you're wrong?
And what if that tip from your second cousin really wasn't the best idea?
You have to have a plan to sell. I mean, if some of the clients I have, they all had individual stocks because I was a stockbroker.
Right.
So they're used to doing that. Mm-hmm. And for them, and because I know their risk tolerance, because I know them very, very well, you know, they could call me with almost any stock idea that they think they want to buy. And so that's great. That's okay. Well, that looks interesting. But where are we going to sell it if it goes down?
Right.
You know, so, you know, I can see that they have expectations on the upside, but I always try to, what you do is you manage those downside.
Right. So, you know, going in when you're buying a stock, typically that you're going to, at the point you would sell it.
There's, on the downside is more important cutting your losses, because you can go from, your expectation is I'm going to make, you have this huge number in mind. But, I mean, what happens is really quickly, and this is where individuals have a very difficult time in individual stocks, because literally within a week, you can be down 20-30% easy. In a week.
Right.
And that's what an individual stock can do to you. And that's hard for most people to accept, that they just bought that stock a month ago and now they're forced out.
Right.
And most people cannot stomach that. They just can't do it.
And that's the discipline of a financial planner. Right?
Most financial planners are not going to do individual stocks for you. Because honestly, most people are not able to take that kind of
emotionally.
Risk. Emotionally. Right. I mean, if you talk to someone and you literally say, okay, you got $20,000 into the stock, you know, what happens when it's, you know.
Now it's only worth $12,000. What are you going to do now?
Yeah, you have to make those hard choices. And those are just difficult things for people to do. And the thing about it is it can happen so quickly.
Right.
In the stock market, in individual stocks. In a mutual fund or in a managed account, you can see a quarterly drop.
But it's not usually as dramatic.
It's not that dramatic. It's something they can usually stomach a little bit better than an individual stock where they have to. I can't tell you how many times I've woke up and then a stock has absolutely blown up on me.
Right. It rarely goes up as quickly.
No, it does not go up. You will wait on these returns 30, 40, 50%. You can get them within 3-4 months, but it takes a long time to get those high returns. Or at least within months, you can get these 30%, 40% returns. And within 2 weeks, you lose all of it.
Now, can you take us through what happens when you meet a prospective client and you get them started?
Well, I think I like to gather the information is that CFP, you know, the first step in the financial planning process is to gather as much information as you can. And that's just not the financial data, you know, income, net worth, and those things, but also what people's values are and what their histories have been with regard to their investments in money and their expectations and, you know, what it is they're trying to have their money do for them. You also want to have an understanding of, you know, what their experience has been with regard to saving versus debt. You know, do they manage debt well? So it's not just me getting
a stake. So it's multifaceted. You try to get a whole big picture of what their whole relationship with money is, really.
With money and also just their values and what they want to do. There are some people that, you know, have this very altruistic attitude about money and they want to do a lot of things in their community, whereas other people want to take trips and you know, spend time with their family and, you know, they're more home-centered.
Right.
So it's always good to know the values behind, you know, what that person is trying to do because everyone is so different.
Now, you say that you have relationships that are like now almost 20 years, like from the very beginning of when you started, right?
I did. Mm-hmm.
So that's obviously kind of unique in your business. I'm sure there's a lot of people don't have those kind of relationships with their financial planner unless you're doing something right.
I think I am. I think I am. I mean, because when it all boils down to it, it is a personal relationship, a long-term personal relationship, because
right.
you can get investments anywhere and they'll be perfectly appropriate. They could be completely different.
Right.
And they'll be appropriate. But it really boils down to, is that person the one that you want to work
trust,
with?
Right, and that you trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have their best interest at heart.
Right. And there's a lot of good planners out there that are trustworthy and You know, but again, there's a personality.
Do you have any success stories you'd like to share? Maybe somebody that, I mean, it doesn't have to be like, oh, this person started with $10,000 and now it's, you know, $50 million. But it's just that they achieved their goal, you know, that you got them into a place where they're, you know, they're where they want to be financially.
Well, it's goals are things that are always in process.
Right.
So you don't set out today, you have a goal 10 years from now. Your goals may not be the same in 10 years they are today. So that's why it's a nice to have a relationship with somebody that can always help you with that. But one of the things that I found out recently with the gentleman, you know, he had a, I forgot who it was, a rep came by his house. He wanted to look at his portfolio.
Right.
And he said, so I so invited him over and I brought out all my statements and I laid them out on the table. And he said, now he was an older guy. He wasn't a younger guy. He was an older guy.
Right.
And he was just saying, I just want to see if you're well suited, if you're happy. Just like to take a like an overview of the account.
Right.
And he did. He laid it out. And the guy, he said, the guy took a look at the accounts and all the positions and all of our holdings. And he said, well, you know, because there's, I don't know if I can help you here. It looks like you're in good shape. I mean, it looks like she's. Whatever you're doing, looks like you're doing a great job. I don't know that I can improve on this any.
Hey, that's the right answer, right?
Right. I mean, because you can always change things, but to change something for the sake of changing it when you're not going to be better off.
Right.
So that was, he said, that was nice.
That's a compliment, huh?
It was. He said, I felt really good about what, and he goes, I always knew you were doing a good job for me, but it was like a confirmation.
That's right. That must have made you feel good.
It did. It did.
That's nice. Now, what's the best way for somebody to reach you? You're taking new clients now, right?
Yes.
So now what's the best way if somebody wanted more information?
Well, I do have a website, dmfinancialplanning.com.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, you can Google Debbie Montgomery, and I'm pop up there.
You're up there high? Nice.
Right there, number two. There I don't know go. Why I'm not number one, but I'm number two.
And then what's on your website? I know you have, what is that financial tune-up?
I do.
You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, it's, you know, that is for someone who does, like, E-Trade, and they do stocks,
right.
And they have a lot of investments out there, and they're really not interested in getting in a committed relationship, if you will. But, you know, where they're under management, fee-based management.
And this gives them kind of a way to kind of check in to see.
Right. I mean, they just may want some questions answered about their portfolio. Do I have any holes in that portfolio? Or they may have questions about Social Security or even insurance issues.
Right.
That they want to make sure, you know, am I overinsured? What do I need? I mean, do I have all my bases covered here?
Right.
And so it's a financial plan. It's an abbreviated version of a what would be a complex financial plan,
right.
Because it's focusing on specific areas of people's concerns, and you just go right there. And if it's an insurance issue, then we review insurance policies for them. And so I'm not selling them insurance. I mean, I can sell them insurance if they want because I have that license as well. But I'm not there to sell them insurance. I'm there to say, here's where you are, and this is what you know might want to consider doing.
Right, some of the options.
Right, and if it's a portfolio, if it's a 401k plan that they have so many choices they don't even know where to begin, I'll help them kind of weed out some of the losers on their 401k and focus on how they could allocate those assets.
Right.
And how they can contribute to that 401k. A lot of people have that.
And that's all on the website. It's all the information about how to sign up for that, right?
Yeah, they can just there's a contract, so it's a one-time fee. It's the $700 is depends on the situation. Sometimes you can get into a little bit more complex situations, and they have more needs than something very simple. In which case, I would charge a little bit more. And then there are other situations that, you know, I could charge a little bit less, but nonetheless, $700 for I don't know, probably about 6-7 hours worth of work.
Right.
It's about, really it's very reasonable.
You go through their whole.
Right. And it takes a lot of time. Right, plus the meetings itself and the talking. So we're talking about a lot of time, but.
Right. But it's worth it because it gives a person that is doing it on their own a way to kind of get somebody else's kind of second opinion.
It is. It's a second opinion, and they can take the advice and do with it what they want. And, you know, really it ends up being about, golly, depending on how much time I'm spending on it, between $100, $150 an hour. In terms of time I'm putting in, which is really cheap for a financial advisor.
Absolutely. That's great value. And so that's at your website. It's dmfinancialplanning.com, right?
That's right.
And do you have an email there? Or they can get all that contact information?
It's all on there. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this special edition of Atlanta Business Radio. See you at our regular time every Wednesday at 10 when we interview another business leader doing big things here in Atlanta.